in the readings for the liturgy, we've been going at practically light speed through the wisdom literature. So we've finished after about 3 or 4 days the book of Proverbs. And now we move on to very quickly through the book of Ecclesiastes. It begins with that famous line, vanity of vanities, all things are vanity. I love Qualeth. I think he's a really interesting person, and he has a very interesting writings. I think every young person in high school and college, this should be required reading, Ecclesiastes. Because I think it answers or touches upon a lot of the questions that young people ask today. He seems like a bit of a sourpuss character. He just seems to be asking all these different questions. But he's trying to get at something that I think we too could have reflected on at some point in our life. The book is kind of broken into two halves. The first part reflects on the futility of the human enterprise, and then also we'll just enjoy life. Eat, drink, sort of be merry because this life is short, but then that still doesn't seem to be enough. He goes on to ponder the limitations of wisdom, of conventional wisdom, saying all the answers like we heard in the book of Proverbs just seem to be too easy an answer, and we've seen that life is a little bit more difficult than that. But the reading for the day focuses on that first part, which is reflecting on the futility of the human enterprise. Pearl S. Buck has a very interesting book called The Good Earth, and it takes place in China. And it's about this Chinese man who's basically a servant who runs a little farm, and he marries this woman who basically is a very kind of a robust woman, very strong, and helps him on the farm. And then he kind of grows up in the social ladder. So he gets more property, he gets more wealth, and then he begins, because he's Chinese and he can, you know, he's on the ladder up the social economic scale, he begins to have a mistress, and he begins to kind of look at his wife as saying she's kind of rough around the edges, and she helps me to get my wealth, but that's about it. I sort of deserve all this. And he goes and he buys so much land that he actually takes over what the person he was serving. He becomes the lord. And now he's dictating what you're going to do and what you're going to grow and so on and so forth. But the very end of the book ends with him on his deathbed, not able to speak, and his sons talking about selling all the land that he had made. And he can't speak. He wants to tell them, don't sell the land. Don't sell the land, because that's what made him wealthy. But he can't speak. And so in a very similar way, Qualeth sort of points to the same thing. What is all this work we do when I could build up this great business, and then I hand it over to somebody who doesn't do anything with it, and it all falls apart? What's the point of all this? And so what he sort of shows is that nothing seems to come to fulfillment. We do all of these things, we search for all of this, and yet it never seems to come to fruition, to great fulfillment. The river flows into the sea, but the sea never fills up. And so that's something that, too, that I think we often kind of ask, why do we sort of find this fulfillment in life? What is it that we keep searching for? Because all of us have this hunger. But for Qualeth, the main issue then becomes is the problem of death. Why labor if it goes to somebody else? Why be wise or good if the fool and the sinful all have the same end? What is the difference between, you know, the man and beast when all of us are going to die? So what's the point of all of this? And no little, you know, nice little saying or an answer for everything is going to satisfy Qualeth. I think in some ways it's the same for us. Death has a way of putting things in a very clear perspective. But, you know, then in the gospel, Jesus comes along. And he really answers the two questions that Qualeth has about fulfillment and about death. Because Jesus Christ, risen from the dead, he comes and he promises eternal life to those who believe in him. Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood has eternal life. He says, you know, if you drink the water that I shall give, you shall no longer thirst, to the Samaritan woman, but in fact streams of living water will flow from you. And so Jesus is promising this fulfillment of all desire. And even Herod, who is caught up in all of the enjoyment of life. He's sort of the vanity fair, and he has everything at his beck and call, and yet he hears about what Jesus is doing and saying, and he wants to see him, because he has, as we all have, this deep desire for fulfillment in life. All of us have this tenacious hunger and thirst for things that will last. That's why we hear Herod of wanting to keep see Jesus, keeps trying to see him. We may try to fill this desire with things that don't last and that don't really satisfy. Example, we might be tempted to play a lot of games on our phone and waste a lot of time doing this. How much time is spent, we spend doing this, and yet we don't feel that good about it. We don't feel that it's really gotten us anywhere. Because only Jesus' word and his sacraments begin to touch the greatest hunger and thirst that we have. And we need to continue to search for Jesus and to follow him, trusting in his promises. Koheleth, in his questioning, wasn't wrong, and he wasn't an idiot. This search for fulfillment, in fact, goes on. There's a sort of irony and twist in the promise that Jesus gives. Yes, he promises eternal life if we eat his flesh and drink his blood, but we're not going to find that fulfillment now. It will come to fulfillment later. And this is what St. Augustine realized when he said, "You breathed fragrance, and I drew in breath, and now I pant for you. I tasted you, and I hunger and thirst. You touched me, and I burned for your peace."